The Tolkien Road, episode 182, 2020 plans, mailbag, and more. Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Tolkien Road, episode 182, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
2020 it is.
Boom. A new decade.
A new decade. And we just keep on rolling.
We do.
We've been rolling a little slower, I'd say, for the last few months, but we're still rolling.
But we're still rolling. That's what matters.
And with 20, you know, the new year comes resolutions for bigger, better, more consistent rolling, as they say.
At least for the month of January.
Yeah.
Maybe February.
Maybe we'll make it to, like, you know, the second week or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's our motto? We like to start slow and ease off.
Start slow and ease off, baby. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Welcome to 2020, everybody. And thanks for continuing on the road with the Tolkien Road podcast.
Yes. Thank you.
Episode 182, today's episode is going to be a continuation of the last episode, which was the mailbag episode, the long expected mailbag. So we have still some more correspondence that was left over from that episode that we haven't yet gotten to. And we'll talk about Latron Prime news, a few items there of interest.
Oh, nice.
And then we'll be talking about some 2020 plans as well. I might talk about the 2020 plans first just to get you all excited. I don't know. I'm not sure which way I'm going to do it just yet. So,
yeah.
Just making it up as I go along.
I was going to say, better make it up soon.
Yeah.
Make up your mind soon.
Well, let me first say this. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes or whatever app you use to listen. Those 5-star ratings are the easiest way you can help get the word out about the Tolkien Road. If you've been listening to this podcast for a long time and have not left us that 5-star rating or and review, all you have to do is rate us. The review is just extra. But the rating, right, those 5 stars, leaving that's huge for us, right? If every person listening to this podcast right now went and did that, then we would probably be able to take over the world.
Probably. So, I was going to say the moon, but yeah. The world is better.
Well, I'll settle for the moon. Settle for taking over the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So please do. Please go and rate us. Leave a 5-star rating. Let me read you a little note. This is a little to bear witness to the importance of your doing this for us. Okay? I got a kick out of this. All right. On iTunes, Apple Podcasts, multi-year listener and supporter. These guys add richness to my life. I never would have gotten through Silmarillion and learned to love it without them. Highly recommended for those wanting to get deeper into Tolkien. My finger slipped and I hit 1 star by mistake. 5-star podcast.
Oh no.
So.
Wait, could they go back and edit?
I don't know. It's uncertain whether they can. So I just need you all to understand that for every person out there who hasn't left us the 5-star rating yet, you know, every once in a while, someone with good intentions, their finger slips, whoopsie doodle, darn Garshnart, right? And it hits the 1 star instead of the 5-star. So this is why it's important for you to leave that 5-star rating for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is an actual review
that
on iTunes. So.
Too funny. And yeah. Now I'm like, I'm actually wondering, like, I don't know. I'm a little confused.
Why?
Like, did they really mean to leave 5 stars? And is the review legit? Or are they really not like our podcast and the review is just tongue-in-cheek?
I think it's probably legit. Like, I can totally see somebody, like, being like, do-do-do, like, listening to the podcast, and they, like glance. Because it's so easy, right? That's the thing. That's how easy it is to leave a rating, to leave...
That you can accidentally leave 1 star.
Is you might just
you
be looking, doing
five.
Like, do-do-do, flipping down, and then you, like, you go to hit the 5, but you're, like, looking over here. You're distracted by something, and then you hit it, and you're like, oops, right? You know? So...
Oh, man.
I totally think it's legit, so...
Well, hopefully they could go back and edit it.
Well,
because
yeah.
Those 1 stars, they
well, just in
hurt.
Case they can't, yeah, please do go leave us that 5-star rating.
Yeah,
just in
make
case.
Up for the finger slip.
That's right.
Yeah, we need
to try
you.
To make up for them giving
we
us
need
the finger
you more than ever now.
Giving us the 1-star finger.
Well, it's just amazing. I feel like for the good effect that the 5 stars have, the 1s have just the same, but in the opposite direction.
Well, one of my resolutions for this year is to not.
Not let your
fingers slip. I'm not letting Bruce bring
good.
Me down.
I was going to say, one of your resolutions is just not to let your finger slip.
I'm siding with the Electric Light Orchestra this year, okay. And my mantra is, don't bring me down, Bruce.
Yes.
Yeah.
Word. I think that's a really good resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you know what? Hate is going to hate.
Hate is going to hate.
Fake is going to fake.
I'm going to just be all like Taylor Swift and
just
shaking it off.
Shake it off.
Yep.
That is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, good for you. Maybe I'll try to have the same resolution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
All right.
All right, now that's settled.
Indeed.
Patreon. Hey, thanks to our newest patron, KDW. I appreciate you going out of your way to become a patron for the Tolkien Road Podcast.
Thank you, Katie.
So don't forget to pledge $1 or more per episode for all of those who are not currently patrons. And you can set a monthly limit when you do it. So the way it works is every time we release an episode, like a real episode, sometimes we'll release episodes that are like, not real episodes, they're just kind of like sharing something with you. That's all free. But whenever we release one of the numbered episodes, then you get charged for whatever your pledge is, right? And so you only get charged if we release an episode. So pretty good deal, especially if you love this podcast. And
totally.
it does cost us time and money to produce this podcast, so we appreciate any support we can get.
Mm-hmm.
So don't forget to pledge $1 or more per episode over at patreon.com/Tolkien Road. And then you'll get new episodes early, over 40 bonus episodes not available elsewhere, and then freebies, all kinds of other freebies available there, and hopefully we'll have another freebie up this month for our patrons. So,
right on.
Also, don't forget about SpeakPipe.
Yes.
We love hearing from SpeakPipe. No new SpeakPipes this time. We had a lot last time, but no new ones this time. That's all right.
That's okay. That's all right. It's a busy time of year. We understand.
But let us hear your wonderful voices.
Yes,
so.
Please.
We had the pleasure recently of being on the Card Talk podcast.
Yes.
And
that was so fun.
The episode, so right now you should look for Card Talk, card as in card game, a deck of cards, Card Talk podcast. And it's a podcast about the Lord of the Rings card game, which I have just had the pleasure of starting to play a little bit recently, and it's a lot of fun. And we were invited to be special guests on a recent episode that actually doesn't get released until February. I'm going to try and release it on this feed, but you all should go over and subscribe to Card Talk. I'm thinking I want to get them on to our podcast at some point.
Yeah,
one of the things
totally.
I'm thinking, just getting a little 2020 plans, I'd really like to explore some of the different games and that kind of thing out there this year, like... just interview some experts on like the Lord of the Rings card game. There's some board games, some of the video games, because I love the way these things allow people to be immersive in Tolkien's world, to be immersed in Tolkien's world. And because one of the most captivating things about his world is the immersiveness of it. Right.
Yeah.
So, anyway, go over and check out the Card Talk podcast and be on the lookout for our episode. Subscribe to it. And they're really great guys. We had a lot of fun hanging out with them a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
And we're looking forward to that episode being released. So you're going to want to check it out. Latron Prime news. So here we are, 2020.
Finally.
And which means we're just getting closer and closer to when this Lord of the Rings on Prime TV show is going to be released. I don't think it's going to be this year, probably be 2021. But the biggest news recently is they have actually cast Galadriel for this show.
Oh.
And it is not Cate Blanchett. It is an actress named Morfydd Clark. I think I'm saying her name correctly. Interesting spelling, Morfydd. Hmm. That seems like if you were given that name as a child, you were born to play a character in Lord of the Rings, I think. So,
yes. Absolutely.
She definitely looks the part. Like, looks like a younger Cate Blanchett. Cate Blanchett, it's not like Cate Blanchett looks old or anything like that, but like she definitely just looks like, the picture I'm seeing looks like a younger version of Cate Blanchett. But it was funny to me when they released this, because they were talking, like all the headlines basically said, like, a young version of Galadriel has been cast in Amazon's Lord of the Rings. And immediately me and all the other Tolkien nerds out there were like, young as in like 6,000 plus years old, right? it feels like anytime the mass media gets a hold of something with Tolkien,
mm-hmm.
there's always going to be something for Tolkien nerds to be like, excuse me, not young, maybe younger, but not young, right? Something like that. So, but yeah, so it's a younger version of Galadriel, because obviously this is taking place in the Second Age.
Right.
So she is over 3,000, 3,000 plus years younger than she is in The Lord of the Rings.
Elves don't really age, though, do they?
Well, exactly. They're immortal. So,
right. I mean, I guess they would change a little bit with the years.
Well, it's interesting. I think they, this would be an interesting topic to explore. Like, is there any such thing as like an elderly elf? And I think the way it works is like, because obviously they're like elves are born, right? For example, Elrond mm-hmm. was the child. He was a child at one point, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
It's not like
right,
he just right. came out no, of his mother's true. Womb as a like full grown man,
right?
Right.
Right.
That would be extremely creepy.
That
like,
would be totally
like
creepy.
Hugo Weaving coming out of his mother's womb. Right?
No, thank you.
So, like I think they grow up, and I'm not sure like the time frame for that, but I think they like they progress as like a human might, but then they reach that like prime age, whatever you want to define that as. Like 35 is kind of like mythically maybe the prime human age, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're in like mm-hmm. your best health, you're fully grown, your mental capabilities are at their peak. Just physiologically, you're like you're where you're supposed to be as a human being, maybe.
Yeah.
That's even like, and part of the reason I think that is like there's some people that talk about like the reason Christ most likely was crucified when he was probably in his early to mid 30s, right?
Right.
When it happened. And so mm-hmm. it's like, that's like the prime of life, right?
Mm.
So the thought is that maybe they hit the prime of life. I'm just completely talking off the cuff here, by the way, people, but they hit that prime of life of like what we would say is like, mid 30s. And that's like okay. what they are forever until they die in battle or something like that.
Got it. So, got it. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So anyway,
she's very pretty.
Very pretty. Well, I mean, as you would expect for
Galadriel. An elven. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
for a, no, she's not a Maya. Never mind.
But no, she's not. Yeah.
But she's, an elf. A beautiful elf.
She's a looker.
Yeah, she is.
All right. Well, so check that out. That's, you can probably just go on and online and Google that. You can follow our Facebook page, too, by the way. I post stuff like this usually on our Facebook timeline so we can have some fun discussion and people post interesting comments and that kind of thing. So go follow our Facebook page and you'll see stuff like this when it comes out. Let's see here. I'm going to save this other one for another time. This isn't really like press, like breaking news. It's more of an interesting thing to discuss.
Okay.
Well, before we dive into the correspondence, let's go ahead and talk about 2020 and what 2020 is going to hold for this podcast. So, hoping to get back on a more or less weekly, cadence as far as releasing new episodes. Got a lot of stuff I'm hoping to get to this year. We've done the three main works of Tolkien, right? We've done Silmarillion, we've done Lord of the Rings, we've done The Hobbit. So where do we go from here? Part of me feels like we're all of Tolkien fandom is in a little bit of a holding pattern for the Lord of the Rings on Prime
mm-hmm.
TV show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're gonna obviously keep our keep our ears to the ground for that, right, and all the news developments that are going on there, and I know that'll pick pace as we start more casting happens and they start filming eventually, and it's going to be really exciting to kind of be part of that, even as a fan from a distance and just speculating about what this show is going to hold for us. But we're going to continue with just exploring Tolkien's works. One of the things we've been doing lately is doing our Second Age deep dive on this podcast. And so we're going to continue that, and our next few episodes are actually going to focus on a story that is actually one of the lesser-known stories, but it's in Unfinished Tales, and it's Aldarion and Arrendis, a.k.a. the Mariner's Wife. So this is a story from the Second Age that is one that I've heard is really good, and I've never actually read the whole thing. And so we're going to spend a few weeks discussing this story. It's a story of the Second Age.
Oh,
I don't think it's
okay.
going to be the focus of the show, but nevertheless, it'll give us kind of the flavor that Tolkien intended for the Second Age.
Yeah, that sounds great.
So that'll be fun.
Okay.
But there's a lot more beyond that. Want to just maybe go into some of Tolkien's poetry. I want to do Unfinished Tales, The Quest for Erebor, The Lost Chapters of The Hobbit. I got a lot of stuff on the list that I'm looking at right now. I don't want to give it all away for everybody, but just a lot still to discuss in the world of Tolkien. So, you know, looking forward to a fun 2020. And I hope you guys are as well.
I know I am.
Awesome.
2020 has a nice ring to it.
2020.
2020 vision.
Yes. That's right.
Yes, yes.
Good.
So lots to look forward to. That's the moral of the story there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's dive into our mailbag.
Let's do it.
So again, we were originally like going to do this mailbag back in October. We got caught up to about mid-October on the last episode that came out in December, and we're going to pick up with everything that was left over in the mailbag up until now. So this is good. This will get us all caught up. So
get comfy, people.
We have a lot more correspondence from our friend Marilyn the librarian. So I'm going to start with her, and then we'll get into that. Prepare yourself. She's got so many thoughts, and they're really good thoughts. And so there's good. A lot for us. And you know, she's the kind of person, I think we said last time, who she reminds me a little bit of, like, I view her in a way like I view somebody like David Bigwood, who's been a Tolkien fan mm-hmm. since like before I was born.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I actually don't know how old Marilyn is, but that's what it feels like, because yeah. she is such a, like, an amazing Tolkien. She knows
basically,
so much.
She should be on this podcast and not us.
Probably. So
yes, we value everything she has to say.
But sometimes it's fun to be a listener, you know, and just contribute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
I agree.
All right. So this is Marilyn's note from October 7th. And this is a note on The Hobbit, the third film in The Hobbit and Peter Jackson's Hobbit trilogy. Hello, Carswells. If you recall my comments on the Lord of the Rings films, my remarks below about the final Hobbit movie won't surprise you overly, I expect. And just to be clear, Tolkien names the five armies in the book. Dwarves, elves, and humans versus orcs and wargs. The wargs all but disappear in the film, except as really tricky horses. Yeah,
yes.
The five armies.
We've had lots of conversations
about the five armies debate
this.
Is always an interesting yes. one. It's I feel like some people think it's just like it's a settled thing. We've had some correspondence on this, definitely, with other people as well, and I never feel like it's as settled as anybody feels like it is.
But. I know, but it's funny because it is like, it is kind of in black and white, right? I mean, we looked it up in the book, but anyway, it's kind of funny.
I'm probably just crossing streams with different conversations we've had, but I feel like we did, and then we were like, but he says over here, blah, 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 you know.
That could be.
So
yeah.
Anyway. That's not really the point of her letter. Moving on. As someone who did archery in high school, I can only say that, number one, Bard's jury-rigging of his broken bow would not have had the needed tension to shoot a twig, never mind an iron black arrow. And it's just as well, because he would have killed his son when the metal fletching passed through his shoulder and neck. Yeah, that scene, you know, where he puts I'm like, that would not have happened.
Totally unrealistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I vividly remember picking bits of feather out of my left index finger after it strayed too close to the shaft of an arrow as I released it, and it hurt. But then we left the laws of physics behind when we fell through the crack into Goblin Town in the Misty Mountains. That didn't trouble me over much then. Hey, they're goblins. But when it comes to something as crucial as shooting a dragon with an arrow, I think Tolkien would have wanted verisimilitude and consistency in a secondary world with resonance to the primary world. Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
I do too.
You know, there are certainly things that are not realistic in a strict sense, but I feel like, and I think I've used this term on the podcast before, Tolkien to me, he was a fantastical realist. Like, he wasn't just like, oh, I'm going to tell you this story and I'm not going to bother with worrying about if things seem real or not. It was important to him that things
right.
within the secondary world mm-hmm. seemed real nevertheless.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that they had their own backstories and that they obeyed a certain law. They obeyed the laws of that world.
Right.
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 So, yeah.
That even if it's not really real, it could be real.
In that
that's
world.
That's what matters.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So, and there is. There's a grittiness and a realness to, you know, to the world of Middle-earth.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So good points. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to hear from you, Marilyn, in this because you were an archer. You've done mm-hmm. archery before.
Mm-hmm.
She goes on to say they could kill the master so dramatically because they had invented Alfred to take his place in the third film.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine Stephen Fry's fees are pretty high. Stephen Fry was the actor that played the master. Besides, starving to death in the wasteland is a slow and boring death for a film. I just wish they hadn't thrown in Alfred's tired, old, cheap shot comedy of cross-dressing. I felt Thorin's dragon sickness went way over the top, and I was appalled that they felt a fanfic-style broken romance was a more dramatic emotional ending than Thorin and Bilbo's farewell. This scene was brilliant. Once again, Freeman and Armitage to the rescue. But it was really dissed by putting it before the Tauriel, Keeley, Thranduil scene with the third-rate dialogue. Thorin's farewell and Bilbo's weeping should have been the peak. Yeah, yeah. I'm not a fan of the whole romantic subplot of that film.
I thought it was really cheesy.
Either.
Yeah.
When I see the rock-eating worms, all I could think was, wait, when did we go to Dune? I think she's talking about the things that come out of the hills, right?
Oh, right.
And do you know what Dune is?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
No, I don't actually. I thought you were talking about, like, sand dunes, but then I realized you weren't.
I was like, should I test her on this?
See, I fessed up. Wait, is it a Star Trek thing?
No, Dune is a science fiction work that came out, I think, in the 60s, and there was a movie made of it in the early... Actually, David Lynch made the movie version of Dune that came out in the 80s.
Okay.
I think they're doing an updated version of Dune now because the Dune movie was very disappointing to, I think, most fans. But I like David Lynch, people. I'm a huge Twin Peaks fan, so... All right. But anyway, she's just... I guess there were sandworms in that movie, so...
Got it. Okay.
I completely agree that Galadriel's display in Dol Guldur was way over the top and a complete misrepresentation of the nature of elvish power. Their rings were all about healing, renewing, and preserving, not about going goth on evil Maiar. Thank you.
Rude.
I agree.
I do too.
Yeah, that I just felt like it was way over the top. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I said when we recorded our episode on that movie.
Yeah, and if you didn't, you should have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should have. Mm-hmm. All right. I did love Bilbo's character development throughout, even if it was a bit hurried. Peaked in the battle with Azog instead of in the battle with the Mirkwood spiders as it did in the book. I particularly love the moment when he says to Gandalf, "I wasn't asking your permission concerning his plan to warn Thorin about the battle trap, who had no business being on Ravenhill, which was the dwarves' lookout post, not Azog's command station." Why did the battle have more livestock than Old MacDonald's farm? And such a missed opportunity to film a battle worthy of Beowulf and the best Anglo-Saxon tradition, if you like battles, of course. The dwarves making a shield wall around Thorin, Fili, and Keeley, falling in defense of their kin, and Beorn's dramatic appearance and crushing of the orcs, saving Thorin from being hacked to death and saving the battle. I was not impressed with his skydive, and then, as you say, his virtual disappearance, nor with Radagast flying on an eagle. But I was thoroughly disgusted with the violence porn they chose instead for the deaths of all three of that line of Durin. No nobility, no agency, just horror and a stupid device of a floating Azog. I wholeheartedly agree with that paragraph. The whole MacDonald's farm, it was so weird to me with like the riding the pigs into battle. You know, Dain riding the pig, right? It's like, what? Like, really?
A pig?
Like, that's just further making the dwarves like kind of goofy, you know?
Exactly.
The emphasis all very misplaced, I think, compared to what Tolkien would have had in these films. So.
Yeah.
She says, I imagine PJ was so tired of all the criticism of the slow denouement of Return of the King that he decided to avoid all that criticism for his final Middle Earth film, and so he chopped all that from Bilbo's return journey. Song suggestion for Yule at Beorn's Drive Dol Guldur Away, a fun, vigorous group song from the Middle Ages. I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah.
Too bad we're past Christmas now.
I like the name is very promising.
Drive Dol Guldur Away.
Yeah.
I will say that the funeral of Thorin, Fili, and Keeley in the extended edition is very moving and even involves the folk of Dale and Lake Town. Worth a watch. Yeah. We need to go back and watch the extended editions at some point. So I remember Sharon was always watching the extended versions when we did the the movie episodes with her.
Yes. So. Yes. And it was funny. I feel like we would like mention something and be like, yeah, we really wish this was in it. And she'd be like, oh, it is in the extended edition.
That's right.
And be like, oh, okay. Of course it is.
We should have watched the extended edition.
We should have. But man, those movies are so long.
Even they already are long.
Out the extended edition.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I disliked especially the third Hobbit movie mm-hmm. so much that I didn't want to make it any longer than it needed to be.
Yeah.
I'll be honest.
Fair enough.
So. Anyway.
Fair enough. I think you can go online, like onto YouTube, and find a lot of those clips now.
Yeah.
All right. Next letter from Marilyn. This is actually concerning her Tolkien pilgrimage. So, hello, Carswells. I had one observation on the art Rankin-Bass animation of The Hobbit. It came out in 1977, only 2 years after the end of the Vietnam War. The mood of the country was definitely anti-war, and I thought of this during a few of your comments. Hmm. I think six dwarves died to drive home the reality of the costs of warfare, and I think that's why they had Thorin accuse Bilbo of cowardice when the Hobbit spoke against fighting. Many people had undergone similar conversations in recent years. It was a tough time. The scars ran deep, and the effects are still with us over 40 years later, but they were still very fresh in 1977.
I didn't even put that together.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought of that, but that's a really good point, Marilyn.
That is a really good point, yeah.
Obviously the Vietnam, I think we left the U.S. left Vietnam in 1975. And, you know, I've certainly heard stories about, I was actually in the Navy myself, so I've heard stories about that era of being in the military. And whereas when I was in the military, you know, everywhere you went, if you were wearing a uniform, people would be like, thank you for your, they go out of their way to thank you for mm-hmm. your service. And they like, mm-hmm. I went to Fenway Park one time in uniform and they took me up to like, they gave me like seats right behind home plate for free. Like I know that in the late 70s, it wasn't really like that with the military. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's a really good point. Kind of putting this film in historical context.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's important to consider that, I think.
And now a Tolkien pilgrimage. Yes, yes, yes.
All right.
Having been to Oxford only 2 years ago and having made that trip my own personal Tolkien journey, I'd be more than happy to share what I learned. I've attached a few photos for your viewing pleasure, just a sampling of the riches available in Oxford alone. Birmingham would also be a good place to go. I think it's actually Birmingham. I'm saying it like it's Alabama, yeah, Birmingham. Right. Some things have been demolished, like King Edward's School, but there are still others remaining. And if there's time, Warwick, where Edith lived for a time with Jenny Grove, and where I think Edith and Ronald were married.
Hmm.
I could see reading the Carpenter bio in several podcasts as a lead-up to the trip, perhaps even doing a podcast while there, but I expect the tech issues would be vexing, and or perhaps reading it together as a group during the trip. By the way, do you know the Colin Duritz bio? Pretty much a repeat of Carpenter, who was the only authorized biographer and who had access to more personal papers than anyone else. I think, but Duritz makes good use of public records to add in a few things about Edith's background. I think he also makes use of John Garth's Tolkien in the Great War. Mm-hmm. You know, I have read one of Colin Duritz's books on, it's the Tolkien and C.S. Lewis book together. It's like a book about their friendship. And it was really good. I really enjoyed it. I actually met him. He came to speak at Belmont University here in Nashville a few years ago. And I had a chance to meet him then.
Oh, neat.
I have not read the biography of Tolkien itself, so that he wrote. And by the way, Marilyn is referring to here is this whole idea that we'd love to do a Tolkien pilgrimage at some point. Mm-hmm. It seems like a very distant possibility, you know, for us right now. But, you know, if we hear from enough people who say they'd love to do it, then maybe we'll do it. So, you know,
it sounds like Marilyn would basically plan it for us.
Maybe.
And we could just show up.
Yeah, maybe we can just, maybe she can lead it and we can just kind of go on.
That would be awesome.
That would be really cool. We've had a few other people get back to us and say they love the idea as well. So who knows? Maybe this will be the year we get our act together on that front. Small group, 5 to 10 is probably better. Travel by public transportation, if it worked for the places we wanted to go, would be cheaper. And perhaps folks could make their own lodging arrangements from a suggested list at each stop, according to their own budgets. There is a Quaker Conference and Retreat Center in Birmingham, Woodbrook, which would have lots of rooms, meeting spaces, and good rates with easy access to the city.
Oh.
Forgive me. I do this sort of... I do this sort of travel for myself pretty regularly and would be more than happy to be a sort of guest lecturer. There you go. Itinerary planner.
Boom.
But I probably overwhelmed you already with ideas and enthusiasm. But if I can be of help in planning this, I'd be delighted. I'm not as good at things like legal aspects, liability, or hiring transportation, but in other ways, I might be useful, to quote Strider.
We're not good at the legal stuff either, so...
So, yeah.
This is going to take a village.
Yeah, it might. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, that's
really cool. We'll see what 2020 holds.
I love that there's people that, you know, that are interested in it. And that there's someone like Marilyn who is willing to just take the bull by the horns and get the ball rolling. That's really cool. I love it, too.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
All right. Next note from Marilyn. And I think this is the last of the many notes we had from Marilyn during this time period. And Marilyn, thank you so much for your patience and waiting for my response to these notes. I know I emailed you and said thank you for all the correspondence, but it's been a while for you. It's been 3 months, taking me 3 months to get our act together so that we could actually respond in full to your notes. So thank you for your patience.
Better late than never, hopefully.
And we hope you'll continue to write to us
as
well.
Yes, so, totally.
She says, on this last one, she says, "Hello, Carswells. So I haven't seen the Tolkien film since May, but I remember it pretty well. I enjoyed your take and the points you raised, and no surprises, I have a few of my own to offer. But first, a note on genres. People comment on how different the three major texts are, and that is not surprising because they are really three different genres. Silmarillion is the mythology of Middle-earth. The Hobbit is the fairy tale, and Lord of the Rings is the epic. We don't expect East of the Sun, West of the Moon, Apuleius, Psyche and Eros, and Beauty and the Beast to be similar because they are respectively folktale, myth, and fairy tale. I don't think I know an epic version of the beast-husband tale type, though it's the basis for most romance novels. I'm not surprised Tolkien didn't finish his attempt at rewriting Hobbit in the style of Lord of the Rings, because the two genres are inherently different. PJ's film version of Hobbit shows the kind of mess that usually results when someone tries to mess with genres. He tried to expand a fairy tale into an epic, and the outcome was mixed at best."
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to summarize.
Yeah, right.
The issues, yeah.
Well, and we're going to see Tolkien's own attempt to do that when we do eventually get around to doing the lost chapters for the Hobbit, this year.
Okay.
So, yeah. that'll be fun. As for the Tolkien film, I was predisposed to be hopeful because the director and producer is Finnish. I freely admit my bias. I found it beautiful as a work of art, but rather overshaped to fit their own story intentions, though I missed the biggest change until after reading a review. More on that below. Here are my random observations, following more or less on the order of your discussion. First, I'll say, read Tolkien and the Great War by John Garth. It's a superb biography of what was probably the biggest event of Tolkien's life. Garth also has an article out comparing World War I experience to events in Lord of the Rings, such as equating the Black Breath with a gas attack, and Frodo's recurring pain with shrapnel wounds. He also writes movingly about shell shock and Frodo's realization that he has been too changed to be able to return to the Shire and be at peace there. Yeah, well, that's a book I've had on my list to read for a long time. I'll have to add it to the list, and maybe we'll get around to it this year.
Cool.
John Garth's Tolkien and the Great War.
Yeah, I'd be down.
I very much liked the film's emphasis on Tolkien's poverty, something that Carpenter seemingly wasn't willing to discuss over much. We as a culture were just beginning to accept discussions of class when this came out. In particular, Edith's comment when they broke up on how people like us don't get happy endings. Of course, that was completely contrary to her actual words in response to Tolkien's letter telling her of the enforced separation. "Our hardest hour has come," or words to that effect. This reminds me of the effrontery of Peter Jackson to have his Aragorn break up with Arwen, and Arwen actually start to head out to the Grey Havens. I wasn't sure why they had to mess with the well-known details of their courtship, the fact that they were married when Tolkien went to the front, etc. According to Colin Duritz's bio, Edith's guardian felt that Tolkien was a poor prospect for a marriage partner, and the unspoken reason was his Catholicism. The spoken reason was his poverty. They also completely ignored the fact that Tolkien insisted that Edith convert to Catholicism, so the line, "she's not even Catholic," from Father F. was rather ironic. I suspect that they felt this would put Tolkien in a pretty bad light nowadays. But Tolkien had made his boy and girl romance, as he himself described it, into a fairy tale of the highest order. Poor but honorable Swain dates beautiful girl in secret. Guardians find out and establish strong prohibitions. Boy sets out to overcome all obstacles and proves himself. Happily ever after marriage. Barren and Luthien indeed, but also Colwick and Olwen Welsh. Probably the oldest Arthurian fragment and an early example of the classic romance of forbidden love. Tolkien himself writes that only the ban by Father Francis, could have given his boy and girl romance such permanence, and their relationship was rocky throughout their lives, though loving for a host of reasons. Carpenter speculates that Tolkien made Edith convert upon their engagement as a sort of test for her after she betrayed their love and him by getting engaged to someone else, and also to compare her to his mother, who he saw as a martyr to her faith. And she says, by the way, in addition to a podcast on Tolkien's bio, I'd love to see an episode on Edith. So, a pause there. Yeah, definitely. All really good thoughts. And I have gone back since watching the movie and read a little bit of the bio, the early chapters of the bio. And there is a lot that they definitely, I guess, artistic license they took with the actual events of their life. And even their courtship and even Father Francis's behavior. It's based, like, there's it's not so far off. I mean, Father Francis was not a fan of their being together. But yeah, it definitely goes too far. And yeah, the big thing for me, the crazy thing for me was the fact that they were already married when he would have gone off to war. So, and they're not in the movie. So anyway.
Oh, right. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. I don't understand. Yeah. Like Marilyn, I don't understand why they felt the need to
I feel like I need to bookmark this for when we go back and do our bio discussion. And I don't know, maybe we'll have Marilyn on as a guest or something
that. That would be cool.
She obviously has a lot of thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. But just to talk about the film again after we read Tolkien's, the early years of Tolkien's biography and have something to compare this to.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
She goes on to say, I think that all the scenes in the trenches and on the battlefield, except for the opening scene of his pushing through the trench with Sam running behind him until he lay down to rest, were intended as fever dreams in which Tolkien was hallucinating what we saw on screen. Certainly even the ones without monsters and riders were imaginary, though doubtless inspired by the horrors of trench warfare. My absolute favorite scene were those with Joe Wright. Derek Jacobi completely aced that professor, no surprises there, who was such an important figure in Tolkien's development as a scholar and an author.
Wait, was he the philologist that Tolkien like convinces to have him in his class, even though it's full?
I believe so. I'm not fresh on the names, but I believe so.
Okay.
I could forgive the creative approach to those events and loved the conversation filmed on Addison Walkway, site of the famous late-night conversation in which Tolkien led Lewis back to Christianity, about the word tree and what it encompasses. That rich love of language for its own sake was one of the best depictions of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like their portrayal of the middle-aged Tolkien having trouble deciding what to write and what it was about. He always had clear ideas, even as they changed over time, and knew what he wanted to write. It was a question of finding the time, not the topic. Yes, indeed. I, too, loved the depiction of Mabel and was sorry that she was there for so short a time, though that's certainly good in conveying the shock of her early death due to diabetes. I wish we'd seen her teaching young Ronald lessons on drawing, calligraphy, and languages. However, I was surprised that they didn't explain it was her Catholicism that led to the family's poverty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It soon became clear that this was because they were in essence omitting virtually all references to Catholicism. Yep. And this leads me to the really scary thing about films. I didn't even notice the absence of Catholicism in Tolkien's life until I read a review of the film afterwards, and I knew how central it was to his life, his work, and his philosophy. Mm-hmm. Images and live actors are so very compelling, they lead us to forget what we know to be true. All the more reason that films should be true to the stories they borrow, or else come up with their own stories. Yeah, Marilyn, you were such an English scholar. I mean, I just remember like having these discussions when I was getting my master's degree. Talking about like especially classes on like fairy tales and folklore and that kind of thing, and like the Disneyfication of these ancient fairy tales and folk stories. And Disney makes the official version.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens with movies. Is somebody makes the official version of this story. Yep. And that becomes the version that the public
knows. Yeah.
That's the accepted myth of the story.
It is. I still remember listening to the real version of The Little Mermaid with our daughter when she was like 7. And she was traumatized.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, well, but if she hadn't seen the Disney version of it, which, I mean, she probably would have been sad.
Right.
But would it have been such a shock? Probably not,
yeah.
But I know it's crazy to think about how that impacts everything, when it comes to how we interpret and feel about certain fairy tales.
Absolutely. That's really frustrating for me because, you know, I have said it many times on this podcast. One of the reasons I'm so drawn to Tolkien is his Catholic faith. And I'm not saying, you know, I don't say that you have to be Catholic in order to appreciate him, obviously, but like, if you want to know where he came from, you've got to understand Catholicism.
Yes.
Like, you've got to understand the influence it had on his own life. And to admit that from, like, the whole reason you're making a movie about this guy Tolkien is because he's this famous writer who wrote these stories that everybody loves, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the world has become kind of like, you know, just enthralled by. And so why would you do a bio about that guy except to understand, like, where do these stories come from?
Right.
And tell us more about this man who wrote them. How can you not include, how can you just omit that, right?
It's right. When it was so central.
It seems...
core of who he is.
It seems borderline Orwellian, you know. You know, like we're trying to erase Catholicism from the, you know, from cultural relevancy, right? So,
and with that, maybe all sense of religion, right?
Possibly. I mean, yeah,
where does it end?
Yeah, and it's a tricky conversation to have with people, because some people will be like, well, they just don't want to make a movie that was all about religion and stuff. But it's like, but Tolkien was all about his religion,
mm-hmm,
and stuff,
mm-hmm,
you know?
And they didn't have to make it all about his religion and stuff. Like, just a few well-placed references and scenes would have conveyed it completely fine.
Yeah, no one was demanding that they make a hagiography, you know? It's not like, you know, that they need to make a saint biopic or something like that. But if you're going to make a movie about this historical figure, you know, like, you need to do better than that. So in this particular aspect of his life. Anyway, all right, beat that drum enough. All right, so Tolkien had a narrow road to hoe when he set out to write about war and Lord of the Rings. He wanted to honor his friends, particularly those who died in World War I. That's why there were four hobbits, the heart of the TCBS, and he wanted to find some meaning in their senseless deaths. I think this is why he's constantly having people, Fëanor, Manwë, Théoden, say that even death due to overwhelming odds may be worth a song. I think he was more pragmatic about it when he had Bilbo say about the Battle of the Five Armies, "Dear me, I'd always heard that death in battle was glorious, but this just seems to be miserable, not to mention uncomfortable." Tolkien never wanted to glorify war, but he did want to honor the memory of his lost friends and find somehow some good, not justification, that came out of their deaths.
Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like the distinction you make there, Marilyn.
Yes. Yes.
Of course, the greatest good was generated by the letter from G.B. Smith, in which he begs Tolkien to survive so that he can say all the things that Smith, in particular, and the TCBS in general, wanted to say but couldn't because of his death. I am profoundly glad they included the text of this, however they messed up the actual timing of Smith's letter and death, because it is, to me, the heart of the whole experience for Tolkien. May you say things I have tried to say long after I am not there to say them, if such may be my lot. I always cry buckets when I read or hear this, not only because of its poignancy and the sheer waste of it all, but also because I believe it was fundamental to our having Middle-earth at all. Enduring horror and even death may indeed be worthy of a song. Okay, that's it for the film. My final email on Latron Prime and the Second Age will need to wait until tomorrow, and then I will finally be caught up. May the road go ever on. I think, I'm not sure if she ever sent that email, or if we read it on the last episode, or maybe I just forgot to start for follow-up, Marilyn. So if you did send that one and I didn't get it, then please do send it, and we'll get to that sooner rather than later. But yeah, just beautiful words there at the end about the death of G.B. Smith, and the whole idea of enduring horror and even death being worthy of a song, right? And that just makes me think, of course, of the book I wrote, Tolkien's Overture, on music and its importance, right? Mm-hmm. That... As you know, some of you, I think I've mentioned, I play in a band. Just started playing in a band. In the last year, I've been writing songs for several years. Played in a band when I was a kid. Always been a big music fan. And started my own band about a year ago. And I just want to say, like, there's nothing like music. Like, music has this incredible ability to transcend everything, and I think for Tolkien it was a wondrous mystery, and that's the whole reason that he couched his entire mythology of Middle Earth in terms of the music of the Ainur, right? That everything had come from this, you know, from this first music, for this first song, right? And that somehow that music was woven into everything in the world. And to me, like, that wasn't just an insight that Tolkien had for his mythological world, but it was something that he sensed in our own reality, right? That there's some kind of song that all of this is building towards, like some kind of finale in the sense of a song. And in all of the difficulty, all of the struggle, everything, there's some kind of harmony that we may not completely understand right now, but we will in the end. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
So, and yeah, I think that accords with Marilyn's idea of the good, right? You know, not a justification for the evil that happens, but that a good nevertheless will come out of it. That good nevertheless will come out of it.
Right.
Right. And that's hard to understand when you're in the face of the evil. Right.
Totally.
So
yeah. But even the Bible says as much, right? Like, I will work all things together for the good of those who love me, or something like that.
Oh yeah, you're talking about Romans, yeah.
Romans. So I mean, that brings the faith into it. But yeah. And what, you know, and I think what's also really special about music is it can express things that words alone cannot.
Right.
Because it brings that element of, well, the music, right? Melody and harmony or dissonance, whatever it may be. And it's amazing. I think even you were, like, I think you showed me something at one point where it was like a very moving scene from a movie, and it was put to like two different types of music, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how one type of music just made you feel exactly what you were supposed to feel watching that, and the other one was just, it completely didn't work.
Well, I think that's I think that video is about that, if it's the one I'm thinking of. It's somebody's trying to talk about how like music at mass should be like, there's a reason the music at mass is important, and that you shouldn't do certain styles at mass, because they show basically, like, you know, because you know the whole idea of the Catholic mass is that it's a you know, you're basically returning to the foot of the cross, right? And you know, so it's this very solemn moment, right? And very solemn liturgical event. And you know, so they play, I think, a clip from the Passion of the Christ with, like, you know, this beautiful, like, polyphony from the Middle Ages or from the Renaissance or something like that, which was specifically made for the mass, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like beautiful and moving, and it just adds to the effect of the scene, right? And then they play the same clip, but they play it with, like, you know, some contemporary, like, Christian worship song. And
that's right, yeah.
And it's just like, it takes away from it just completely detracts from the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. So again, the importance of music,
yes,
right, and its ability to make you feel and connect—it's pretty unmatched.
Absolutely. Well, Marilyn, thank you so much for all that amazing correspondence back in October. Thank you for your patience and waiting for us to get back to you, and we look forward to hearing from you more. And I expect, we will, now that we have a plan for, you know, for our mailbag and everything, you know, we'll do better at not waiting so long.
At least we're resolving to here in 2020.
You hit us hard with a lot of long letters back
really
then.
Really good stuff.
Like, whoa, how do we digest all this?
Yeah,
goodness.
Yeah.
But it really was good stuff. So looking forward to hearing more from you in 2020.
Yes, thank you.
The next note is from Tyler W., sent on October 24th. He says, "Hello, so I must admit that I have had your podcast saved for many months, and this morning was the first time I was able to finally listen to an episode. Just over a month ago, I got married, and right before that, I received a promotion at my job." He says he works in minor league baseball.
That's cool.
"Which my fiance at the time purchased me an Audible subscription, and I've been working through all the Harry Potter books because my wife is a massive fan and I enjoy them. However, I finished book four last night and was able to take this morning's commute and listen to Tolkien Road. The sheer number of episodes was overwhelming, and I did not know where to start, so I scrolled a bit and came to 171, Tolkien on the Meaning of Life, letter 310. I loved it. I am a believer myself and see Jesus through Tolkien's work so often, and have ever since I was a young lad. Thank you for your discussion on that podcast. My reasoning on reaching out was to bore you with that small commentary And secondly, ask for your advice as to what other episodes I should check out on your channel. Any recommendations and ones that should not be missed? I'm considering becoming a subscriber through Patreon as well, but as you can imagine, we'll speak to my wife. Thank you for your time if you have read this far. All the best, Tyler. So awesome. I'm glad you started listening, Tyler, mm-hmm. and glad you enjoyed that episode, Tolkien and the Meaning of Life. I think I'd responded to Tyler already and told him some other episodes. I'm trying to find my note here.
The short answer is all of them.
Yeah, right? Well, yes, you should listen to all of them. But I said, if you like the spiritual angle, you should check out number 126, Tolkien, Miracles, and the Way Things Really Work. Number 99, Christianity and Lord of the Rings with Joseph Pierce.
Oh, yeah.
Number 57, Concerning March 25th, Frodo's Quest, the Annunciation, and the Crucifixion. And the early episodes on Leif by Niggle, Mythopoeia, and On Fairy Stories. So,
yeah,
that's your list.
Those are good recommendations.
Yeah.
And, of course, Joseph is just phenomenal. So, yeah.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for reaching out, Tyler.
Thank you, Tyler.
Great to hear from you.
Yes, great hearing
and,
from you.
And it's cool that you have a job and working in baseball. That's fun.
We love baseball.
We are huge baseball fans.
We're total baseball nerds. In fact, we just received for Christmas, we got cornhole boards with Orioles logo on them.
Yeah, we're big Orioles fans. Not sure who you're a fan of, Tyler, but I just hope and pray it's not the Yankees. So,
right.
All right, moving on.
Any other team?
Paige H. on November 12th. Paige had actually, we read her first note on the last episode. And she said, thanks for getting back to me. I'm sure you were very busy. If you feel my comments are worthy of inclusion, by all means, and thank you, I'll be sure to listen. I think this is just in reference to something I'd said to her. She said, I was wondering if I could pick both your brain and Greta's on another issue that I've been struggling with reading the Silmarillion. At several junctures, it seems as if the races of men have been forsaken or outright abandoned by the Valar. While at first I thought this was a reaction against the meddling with elves, i.e. we really inserted ourselves in their affairs and things still went south, but after reading about the Edain, it now appears as wanton neglect. Tolkien even states that Morgoth was allowed to corrupt men in the East before their meeting with the elves, with no consequences from Valinor. Whereas previously, a corruption of elves into orcs was one of Morgoth's worst crimes. In short, I wanted to ask you both why you thought the Valar are largely absent from the affairs of men, and why Iluvatar created men in such a way as to prevent communication with the Valar, not being able to hear Ulmo in the waters, for example. The great question.
We've talked about this, I think.
Well, and Paige asked a similar sort of question on her last email that we read in the last episode, but I mean, who knows how to answer this, Paige? It's a really fantastic question, but it's a very deep existential question too, because you're really trying to peer into the mind of Iluvatar, you know, with all these things, and this is much like trying to peer into the mind of God in our own reality, right? Like, why did he do things the way that he's done them, right? And it's kind of like,
Well, first of all, it's above our pay grade.
Yeah.
We don't know how to answer that. His ways are far beyond ours.
So all you can do is speculate, right? All you can do is postulate different ideas. And I mean, this gets very theological for me. I have noticed that too. Like, it's interesting that the elves have a much closer relationship with the Valar than men do. Why is that?
Well, they're the firstborn.
They are the firstborn. And because they're immortal, they're something like the Valar, right? They share that in common with the Valar. Whereas men, like, you know, you think about it, like, men, the big problem for men from the very beginning is the fact that they die and they grow jealous of the elves and of the Valar, right? And that's big story of Numenor, is they're like, you're withholding immortality from us, right? We could have immortality too, but you're withholding it from us. So I don't know, like, why were men made with this weakness, right? Why were men made with this weakness in Middle Earth? Why were they made with this weakness in our own reality? You know, it's an existential conundrum, but all you can do is, if you believe in the goodness ultimately of that all things will work out for the good in the end, then all you can do is say that we will know and we'll understand and we'll acknowledge its goodness in the end. right?
Yeah.
Why all these things? Why it all unfolded this way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why does God in our own reality seemingly fail to intervene in great tragedies, right?
Yeah.
You know, why didn't he prevent the Nazis from coming to power during World War II? Why didn't he do something to prevent any other war from happening where, you know, millions of people died, right? We can't really know right now. Mm-mm. We can't really know in the here and now, except we, you know, there's an act of faith that happens. You either don't choose the path of faith and to say like, well, I have to have faith that it'll all work out for the good in the end. Or if you don't choose that, then you're kind of left in this existential darkness about it all. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So, and that's not even to get into the question of, in our own reality of Christ and the coming of Christ and the way that Christ's crucifixion followed by his resurrection reveals is kind of a first glimpse of God's will, right, for us, right? That even through the darkness of this life, in the end is bliss and joy and happiness, right? Even through the shadow of death, right? Even through the valley of the shadow of death. Within the world of Middle-earth, of course, Tolkien intended it to have a connection and to be a prehistoric rendering of our own reality. So I guess that story sits there as well, especially with the connection with March 25th, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely.
But Paige, I mean, I could wax poetic for a while about it. So I'm not entirely sure what to tell you there. But I will say that. Let me go and announce this. So, middle of last year, I started a new podcast with a friend, Dr. Chris Hackett, and he is a philosopher. And it's called Red Lamp District, and I'm not sure I've told anybody about it yet on this podcast, but I encourage you to go over there and subscribe to that podcast. We are going to be doing, in the new year, we're going to be starting discussing a book called The Doors of the Sea by David Bentley Hart, who is a philosopher. And this book deals with the question of evil in our own reality and why basically like evil happens. Right. Mm-hmm. And what's an explanation for that? He looks at it through the prism of, or through the lens of the Indonesian tsunami from, I think was it 2005 or 2006. So we're going to be doing a couple episodes on that here soon. So I'd encourage you to maybe go over there and subscribe to the Red Lamp District and just check that out and follow us and, you know, begin corresponding with us over there if you'd like to. So that invitation is for everybody listening. So not just for Paige. So,
word.
Yeah,
I've listened to some of it. It's good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. Did you leave a 5-star rating for us?
I think my finger slipped.
Oh man.
Unbelievable. I'll go back and check.
All right, finger slipping. Apple really needs to look into that.
I know, right?
So they need to be like, did your finger? You left 1-star. Did your finger slip?
They need to at least give you a chance to be like, you know, like when you click delete on an email, it'll be like, do you really want to delete this? Right? So if anybody leaves a 1-star, it should like pop up with a box that says, do you really want to leave a 1-star review? Like,
oh, snap. 1-star? That's not very nice. Are you sure?
Are you sure? Right. Question mark. That's a really good email though, Paige. It's a lot of really good food for thought.
It's an amazing question.
I mean,
I just wish I was better equipped to answer it.
Well, you're way more equipped than I am, but the only thing that was kind of running through my brain is, as John was talking, was that, you know, what is it? Sam says at one point, he's like, well, everything's sad. Come on, true. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just like part of the sadness that we deal with, right? I mean, is what the Valar is apparent. I mean, we don't deal with it. But anyway, that's just going back, you know, to the Silmarillion. That's some of the sadness that I think Sam's referring to.
Yeah.
And will everything sad come untrue? Yeah, it will eventually. And will we ever like, and we will know eventually why, you know, the reasons for things that appear to be sad and evil.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, it's a question of the vindication of divine goodness, you know, to get really theological and philosophical on you. And so the vindication it would seem, would have to, you know, we'd have to be able to look back in the end and say, yes, it did really all work for the greatest possible good, right? And no one was left behind in all of that, right?
Right. Yes.
That seems to be the answer to the the only answer to the question. But how that all works out, it's a mystery to me.
Mystery to me too.
So
yeah.
Thank you, Paige.
Yes. Thanks for the note.
The next note is from Matthew Y, sent on November 18th. Evening, guys. I'm not sure what the protocol is here, but I thought I'd drop a line and see how you guys are doing. We're doing quite well. Thank you, Matthew.
Yes, thank you, Matt.
So I just wanted to email to ask a simple question that's been bugging me for a long time and wondered if you guys might give me an opinion. It is a question that has plagued me for 18 long years since I was 13 years old. So, you know, no pressure. Let me preface this by saying that I am the very extremely rare reader who dove into the Legendarium after going to the movies and being absolutely blown away by Fellowship of the Ring when I was 12. Oh, that was everyone. No, I'm the rare reader who read The Silmarillion first before Lord of the Rings at 13 years old. So, wow. Listen, I'm breathing rarefied air out here when I'm going to ask the question that has plagued me for quite some time. Do the three elf princesses who married mortal men age physically when they give up their immortality? I've spent years, I tell you, trying to find answers to this question. My current diagnosis is that they, in fact, don't age at all. From what I've read in the text, they seemingly remain young and beautiful for the remnant of their lives. The evidence that I found in the text comes from Beren and Lúthien in the tale of Aragorn and Arwen. Let me just stop right there and say I think that, in my mind, they don't age. And I think of the same two tales. And again, I don't have the answer right in front of me. I haven't gone back and researched this necessarily, Matthew. But the impression I came away with from both of those stories is that Arwen and Lúthien both do not age, even though their husbands age. Maybe they age in terms of grief. Right, like spiritually age or emotionally age because of the grief they have to endure at the death of their husbands, who are mortals. But they themselves don't age in a physiological sense. But I almost want to say they end up. I don't know if with Lúthien, there's anything about how she eventually disappears. With Arwen, I feel like she dies of grief. Right, I feel like she mm-hmm. dies of like. It's just almost like unwilling to go on living after a certain time without Aragorn. So,
right. Yeah.
And she's not allowed to go to the... So that's my initial kind of knee-jerk reaction to your answer. Not well-researched. Let's move on with his letter, though. In the Silmarillion, it states that after Thingol is killed by the dwarves, Beren and Deor fight the dwarven army and recover the Silmaril. Afterward, Beren presents it to Lúthien, who wears it and becomes the most beautiful being in the whole of Arda, dancing and creating heaven on earth. But if we're judging by Luthien's age at this point, in mortal years she would be pretty up there, judging by the fact that Deor is grown, married a Sindar aristocratic lady, and they have three children that are in the middle of their childhood, cause Elwing is said to have chosen to become an elf because of her memories of Lúthien when she was a girl. So all I'm saying is that Lúthien would be one spry madam if she was dancing at the time all the time and creating heaven on earth while pushing 60. The other evidence I've come across is in the tale of Aragorn and Arwen in the appendix. It's a small find, but it comes when Aragorn is about to die. When Arwen admits that she's afraid of death, Aragorn tells her to take the ship to Valinor, which implies that she hadn't really made her choice yet of being mortal or not. Also, and more of a physical observation, after Aragorn is dead, Arwen spends a year traveling to Lorien and Rivendell, treading the old stomping grounds. Mind you, she does this on her own, completely alone. Now think of Frodo and Sam's journey from Lorien all the way to Gondor. I feel that's not a trip that a 100-plus-year-old woman is going to make here. So, like I said, I've so far concluded that the elf princesses do not age, which, sidebar, it makes you wonder, if your wife was forever young and beautiful, don't you think you'd have more kids too? Like if you were married to Lúthien, you know, just so many kids, like 19 and counting numbers here. Know what I'm saying? I can see that. Yeah. But that's neither here nor there. Anyway, I just wanted to pose the question to you guys, since one of you is literally the guy who wrote the book on Beren and Lúthien. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the speculation. Always leave them wanting more. Your friend in time, Matt. Really interesting question. It's funny to me that, you know, this has been like bugging you for so long. I don't know. You know, I kind of shared my thoughts already on it with you. I would just say maybe we can crowdsource this question for Matt you know, if there's anybody out there that has some helpful thoughts that they might want to throw out there on this particular question. I can't think of any source. I'm a sources guy, though. So I'm like, if I'm going to know for sure, then I need to be able to go back to the sources and, you know, feel good about the answer. Otherwise, yeah, I'm just kind of speculating, as I already did a little bit.
Right, to back you up in black and white.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Like, none. But I like what you said.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Matt's sources are legit.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah, I don't think they age. Like, I don't think... I don't think Luthien would have, and I just didn't get the impression that Arwen did. Like, I feel like they,
even after they gave up their immortality,
right,
and chose to become human. See, that's the piece that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah,
because it seems like you would lose that gift,
mm-hmm,
if you're no longer immortal. You would have to age at some point because you would have to die at some point. And now, unless, like you said, it's a more inward, like, you know, more spiritual or emotional aging, not so much physical. I don't know.
I might pose this to the to our Facebook page and see what people come up with there. So,
not a bad idea.
But, you know, if anybody has some thoughts on this and wants to share them with us, email us, TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, please let us know.
Thanks, Matt. Great to hear from you.
Yes, thank you.
And we'll let you know as we get follow-up. And then the last note we have for you today is from Evan D., sent on November 30th. I've been listening to you for a while, and I would like to express my gratitude to you for providing so friendly an outlet for me to absorb and experience all things Tolkien in such a way. I just finished listening to your series on Akalabeth and thoroughly enjoyed that, fulfilling my need for explanation and elaboration and sharing my stumble through the brambly thicket of Tolkienian literary analysis. May the hair on your toes never fall out. My best wishes, Evan.
Wow.
So
fantastic.
I love that.
I do love that too.
Hair on your toes never fall out.
Never fall out.
Very nice.
No.
All right, y'all.
That's great.
Well, we are all caught up on our mailbag.
Nice.
Only took us a couple of months to get there. And now we are ready to cast out into the unknown of 2020.
Wow.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Very exciting.
Very exciting.
Thanks for all the awesome notes, everybody.
Yeah.
And
we love hearing from you guys.
We look forward to hearing more from everybody. Don't forget about SpeakPipe. Great way to get heard on the next episode. And yeah, we're excited to keep on going down the road in 2020.
So just to clarify, a SpeakPiper does not need to wait for a mailbag episode. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that should be, that's pretty awesome motivation there, if you ask me.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
All right.
Well, that's a wrap.
That is a wrap.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening. Oh, we almost forgot. Thanks again to our patrons. You all rock. And a special shout out to our $5 plus patrons. Eric B.
Daniel P.
David B.
Robert F.
Chuck F.
Andrew T.
Ish of the Hammer.
Chris L.
James L.
Al T.
Zeke F.
James A.
Emilio P.
Shannon S.
Teresa C.
Azia V.
And Brian O.
Thank you, guys.
Yes, thank you very much. And thanks to all of our listeners,
yeah,
and especially to all of our patrons. And we'll talk at you next time.
Yes, we will.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.